Father God, we know that it's a gift that we're even here. That how do we even wind up in the fourth dimension, clubhouse, Hollywood, sober? We ask you to transform this meeting house tonight into your house. Help us to stay focused on your message. Help us to put down all walls so that we can get closer to you during this time. It is such a blessing, God, that you allow us to have meetings like this. And we ask that we stay focused during this hour. And we're just so very grateful. And we pray all this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Hey everybody, my name is Stevie B. And I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I'm a proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
And it's such a blessing to be here with you guys tonight. We're good. All right. Can you hear me back there?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I was on my way over here, and it's been a lot of years since I've been here. But this clubhouse holds an amazing amount of incredible memories for my wife and I. I was in treatment with the gentleman that's working behind the bar. He was like a trustee or something when I was there. I'm not exactly sure what he was, but I think he was there like 2 years while I was in treatment there. And the gentleman that, is Emilio still here? And Emilio, that this clubhouse wouldn't be here because of him, holds such a special place in my heart for my wife and I. And Emilio used to come down to transitions while I was down there. It was 8 years ago and 2 months. I went there on my birthday, and Emilio used to take meetings down there, and he used to take guys from that place to this house. He used to come pick us up. I remember it was the greatest thing that if you could get a pass to come out with Emilio and Rich to come to a meeting, you know, they would let you know during this meeting that they had if you got to come out to do a pass, if you can come to see the bikers and come to this meeting house. You know, when you're in treatment and you get to go in a car outside of treatment, it almost feels like the first time you've ever been in a car. Even if you've only been in there a week, it's like, this is a car. You start passing places you passed 100 times. Look, there's a McDonald's. And there's a nostalgia, and everything is so different. And I remember Emilio's service when he would come down and pick us up and bring us to the meetings. And y'all never forget that time, because it was a time in my life that was so painful and so joyous all at the same time. It was a time that not only did I found out that I was powerless, but I also found out that maybe there was going to be hope again. Tomorrow I get to pick up my 8-year medallion. It's been 8 years today, and thank you very much. It's a gigantic deal for me, because I've been in recovery 2 times now, actually 3 times. One time I had 1.5 years when I was young, 22-year-old, I got 1.5 years, and then the next time around I picked up another 1-year medallion. My father gave it to me, and he said that this is the 1-year medallion. He was very proud of me. And then this time around, I had another 1-year medallion, and I've had 2 7-year medallions. Because I was sober 7 years last time, and I'm sober 7 years. But this is the first 8-year medallion. Right. So if you don't think there's going to be a lot of humility over the next 12 or 13 or 14 weeks, because some of the steps get broken up into twos, you know, here's a 3.2, and it's an 11 reloaded. That's always takes a little time. Hopefully, you understand how much this means to me to be here. And I want to just disagree with you on something. I didn't say yes right away. You called me and you left a message, and I checked with the boss. Of course, I got down on my knees, and then I checked with my wife, of course, to find out if we could be here. Because Saturdays, is it the mic or is it me? Saturdays is a couples meeting for us. It's a meeting that we go together. There's some Chappie members here, some chapter nine. It's one of the chapters. And so we got a bunch of the couples that are here tonight, and I so appreciate you guys coming here. But that's our meeting night together. Saturday night is our meeting night together. So two things. One was that I knew this was Emilio's place. And the second thing is I love to talk about the message. I love talking about God. I love talking about what he's done in my life. But since this is date night for us, you got to get permission. So I said to Sandy, it's going to be the same night as the ninth chapter. And this is ninth chapter is very important to us. And Sandy said, and that's when I was able to call you back, she said, and I said, plus I just finished the 12 steps at the 12-step house. Everybody's heard the message. If they didn't hear the message, they heard about the message. And Sandy said, but there's one that didn't hear the message. And that's what I'm here for tonight. And over the next weeks, I hope that the one person that, like Russell did for me when I was in transitions with Richard, like Russell did for me, I hope that there's one in here tonight that changes the path of your life. Not my message, but his message. The message of Alcoholics Anonymous. The message that's outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The message that's so free. It's so available, and yet it's almost like a secret society, the ones that have actually entered into the fourth dimension. You know, they call this the fourth dimension clubhouse, but it's almost like a secret thing if you're in the fourth dimension. It's almost more popular to be miserable in AA. What I want to tell you, you don't need to be miserable. There's an incredible program that's outlined in these two books that's been taken from another book that works perfectly, that'll bring you to a place of joy and happiness. You will be so excited to get to a meeting. You won't go to a meeting like you just... You'll be so excited. And if you stay here over the next 12 weeks, if you stay here on this journey, we will disclose to you in not a general way, we'll disclose to you in an exact way how you go from a buffet line, how you'll be at the beginning of a smorgasbord line, where at one time that you might have settled for a crouton. I promise you that if you stay and you come back, that we'll be discussing on how you can eat the entire buffet and how the whole thing's available to you. The prime rib, the lobster, the pork loin. The whole buffet is available to us. God didn't design this thing so that we would just hang on. I guarantee one thing, Emilio didn't get involved in this clubhouse, and Richie has been doing service here for 8 years because we're just hanging on. We have discovered a new way of life. How about it, Eddie? Did you discover a new way of life? Because I heard the 31st year is very tough, and I'm a little worried about it. This man came down here from Boca tonight with his wife. Traveled all the way down to Boca. And yesterday, he traveled all the way down to Boca and all the way down to Miami. We did a step yesterday morning at 10 a.m. at the 101. And he came down with 31 years of sobriety. He was there at 10 a.m. and then said, I got to go because now I'm going to go see Russell in Miami at the 12 p.m. That's what he does on a holiday. Because it's exciting for us. This is not a have to. So, it's really a blessing. Tonight, I have my friend Eddie here who's sitting in the front table. We were in halfway together 8 years ago. I got my friend Brian in the back, Bodge. Same halfway house 8 years ago. We got Joel over here, same halfway house 8 years ago. And then our other friend, who I'm not going to mention, but he was in the halfway house 8 years ago, is in detox tonight. And that might sound like it's sad, but believe me, you know what's sad? When we're out there. That's sad, right, Dan? That's sad. Tonight we're going to talk about where it says if you don't think you're an alcoholic, go out and try some controlled drinking. And I want to tell you that I did that. I didn't think I was an alcoholic, and like I said, I told you, I picked up my 7-year medallion. Picked it up at the 12-step house. Did I say I was from the West Side Men's Group? Yes. I just want to let you know, because there's like a whole slew of West Side Men's Group guys out there. Dave, make sure if there's anyone, that's it, we're done here tonight. You know, being a member of a home group, as you know, Jeff, there's really nothing like it. In Alcoholics Anonymous, because lack of power was our dilemma right there. I would like to tell you that if I asked all the members of the West Side Men's Group to raise their hand right now, half the room would be the West Side men's room. Because that's how we traveled. That's how we rolled. But as it was coming out, it sounded so artificial. But that's how we roll. We rolled together. And the king of all text messages, the BlackBerry king of himself, Eric Steinberg, is right here. And he'll send you a message. It doesn't even matter if you're in this country, you'll get a message that one of us is speaking. You know, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it said that we absolutely insist on enjoying life. Amen. If you're not enjoying your program, if your program has become just about hanging on, and how you doing? I'm staying sober. I'm making it through today. I want to tell you there's a whole nother program. Amen. And we're going to be discussing that. I'd like to request new batteries next week, if that's okay. And we could bring our own batteries, but... God is so good, huh, Emilio? God is so good. How does he take a guy that can't stay sober, that's in a treatment program in Miami, and I was fighting every single day there, how does he take that guy that nobody wants to hear, what never was allowed to get a pass? Rich, you know I was never allowed to get a pass. They'd go around the room, Annie, pass. Sally, pass. Pass is when you can go outside. Joey, 3-day pass. Stevie B, no pass. Because I was fighting every second of that. And I think that the counselors love to watch me wind up like a wind-up toy. They just love to say no pass to me because I... You know, one time if I would have just been like, that's okay, I would have got a pass. But I could never get that was okay. I could never say, all right, no pass. As soon as they say no pass, I went into complete alcoholic Italian getting from the Bronx mode, you know, and I started to get all flustered, and I never got a pass. How do you get to be that guy that has a fist fight inside the treatment center, that gets his face punched in inside the treatment center, that gets kicked out of that treatment center, to a guy that 8 years later is coming over here and is going to share his experience, strength, and hope with you on Saturday nights for the next 12 weeks? It's only by the grace of God. So you can't orchestrate that. It's not possible. Rich, who was the worst guy in the treatment center when you were there? Be honest. Who was the worst, loudest? You know the truth. I was the worst guy. There was no other guy that got into a fist fight that had police come and drag him off the... There was no other guy that did that. People were using had a bad attitude in the treatment center. Those people that were smoking crack in the treatment center that had a better attitude than me. And yet somehow, look, just a little bit after that, which I'll tell you about in the next couple weeks, I got into my car, I went driving, under the influence, I got a 6-felony car crash, I got put into the system, I got arrested, obviously, I got put into the system, and somehow, I found out about this power that this book talks about. Somehow, he thought about me way before I ever thought about him. He had this plan all outlined. He knew that in January of 2010, that I was going to pick up an 8-meter medallion, and we were going to do the steps over here, and was going to maybe change one person's life. And he reached that gigantic God hand out, put me in the palm of his hand, and said, why don't you let me take it from here? And here's how we do it. It's called the 12 steps. It's going to enable you to find a relationship with a God of your understanding, absolutely. But it's going to enable you to have excitement and joy and fun. We have so many different ideas and philosophy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just looking over the room, looking at Happy Bob. I was just thinking about Happy Bob, what he does on Friday nights, and Ernie Richardson. So many people inside this room, we have so many different ideologies and philosophies. And yet this is one thing that we all can agree on if we have contented sobriety. Contented sobriety. Because anyone can just stay sober. I mean, I know people that are in jail that stay sober the entire time they're in jail, and the day they get out, 10 years later, boom, drinking. So if you think that your length of time of your sobriety is anywhere indicative
on the quality of your sobriety. I want to tell you that you're wrong. It's great if you're sober, but there's some people that are so sober that, ooh, I don't even want to go near them. They're so sober. If you light a match, they would catch on fire. That's not what I want. No matter what ideology that you have in you, no matter where you come, no matter what neck of the woods, no matter what type of bike you ride, what type of car you came in, if you drove a bus, if you rode in a bus, if you've never even been in a bus, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the great equalizer. The great equalizer, Kevin. This right here, we can all agree on. I hope we all can agree on. Unless there's some people that are hardcore NA. And then we could agree on that. Still, we should agree on this. Because all the answers are in here. This is an amazing textbook for life. I mean, if you look at some of the things that we're going to be talking about in here, and you actually open it up, and you read it. Tonight, we're going to talk about the rapacious creditor. Who talks like that, the rapacious creditor? You can find those words in the books. You're not going to find them in a regular AA meeting. That alcohol became the rapacious creditor. But you'll be finding it in these books. And let me tell you, we don't read these books enough. How many people would agree, just by a show of hands, how many people agree that you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, but you really don't know really what is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Be honest. You're not a student of the big book. Or, this room is so... You're a bunch of liars, I'm going to tell you. Let me rephrase the question for all you people that have been on trial many, many times. How many people in here would agree that in 2010 we could read the textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous a little bit more? Come on. Come on. Thank you. I knew with this group I had to rephrase the question. I knew it. This is going to be a tough one over these weeks. One hand went back. One hand. Oy. And I'd like to offer a challenge to you. I'd like to ask you, if you're going to come back here, bring your book. Bring your book and bring a highlighter. I know, Mark, that sounded like very heavy stuff. That was it. But I think it'll be good. I mean, how much do we learn? It's hard to retain it all. You know, I got the Wii for Christmas. The Wii. You know what the Wii is? The Wii is that entertainment system that you don't have to use the wires with. And this is what it feels like. It feels like the Wii. Every time it goes off, I go, that's the Wii. It's the same thing. That was like I just returned a tennis serve. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives became unmanageable. Who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It is truly awful to admit that, glass in hand, we have warped our minds into such an obsession for destructive drinking that only an act of God or providence can remove it from us. Listen to that last line. Only an act of providence or God can remove that from us. No other kind of bankruptcy is like this one. Alcohol now became the rapacious creditor. I'm looking right over. A lot of people didn't even know the rapacious creditor's in there. You know what a rapacious creditor is? It's a creditor that doesn't stop calling. It's a creditor that won't stop. It's like the modern day, what are they? Loan sharks, right? Ernie? Loan sharks. They don't stop.
Alcohol becomes.
Hello. This is a tough gig. This is starting out to be
a tough gig. Alcohol becomes a creditor that won't be stopped. Is that okay? Can we do that?
Yeah. From New York, go ahead.
I mean, I would prefer a microphone, but I'm going to go with this for tonight. God wanted me to go with this. No other kind of bankruptcy is like this. Alcohol now became the rapacious creditor, bleeds us of all self-sufficiency, and at will resists its demands. Once this dark fact is accepted, our bankruptcy, as going human concerns, is complete. What does that mean? It means that only God can relieve this from us. That if you're anything like an alcoholic like me, if you're anything that is even close to alcoholics of our sort, there's not going to be any human power that's going to be able to relieve us of this obsession. You know, I was standing back here tonight, and I looked at my wife, and tears were coming in my eyes because I knew that you were here to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the room was packed. And there's nothing that makes me so happy, so fulfilled, is knowing that the room is packed to hear about a meeting, a message of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I love speaking down in your place, honey, because they're ripe, and they want to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is one word, hope. It's hope. All I ever wanted, when I was back there at Transition, all I ever wanted was to wake up the next morning and not think about getting high. And I thought it was impossible, because every morning I woke up in the treatment center and I wanted to get high. I could taste it. I knew that right outside the place we were staying, there was people maybe even in the same apartment complex that were getting high. I could smell it like a dog, like those dogs that go in the poop and they look for those special mushrooms. I knew somebody was getting high in that apartment complex. I only wanted that someday, if God's grace, that I would get one day, not sober, because I just had 7 years sober. I wanted one day, again, not thinking about getting high. I thought to myself, if I could have one day, if I could put my head on the pillow and wake up and still not want to get high, it would be a miracle. And that's all I wanted. You know, they say that you come in here and then you're going to have a life beyond your wildest dreams. A life beyond my wildest dreams consisted of, I wanted one day of not thinking about getting high, not one day. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we're real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. The idea that someday, he will control his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. Let me stop right there and let me say something. It doesn't matter to me what you used. You know, some people get very nervous when I say, even though this is Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that half the room just went like this when I said alcoholics. You went like this, addict. Let me read that line to you again. It's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. It doesn't matter what your substance is. I thought that I wasn't an alcoholic. My wife will tell you. I was 5 years sober, and I went to my home group, the 11-step group at the 12-step house, and I said to the home group, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. Because if you go back over my life, I never had a problem with alcohol. Never had a problem. I could always take or leave alcohol. Is there anybody in here that feels that? Be honest for a second, you. Is there anybody in here that has had the thought that maybe they don't have a problem with alcohol, but they know that they have a problem with drugs? Be honest. You don't lose your card in Alcoholics Anonymous if you admit that. Well, I knew I had a problem with drugs. It was white. It was definitely white. It was. I knew I had a problem with drugs. That was an easy match. I could go back over my life and say, this is what, I pawned my car. Who pawns their car for alcohol? In the middle of the night, I go pawn my car. Possible I have a problem with drugs. But 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm saying, my name is Stevie B and I'm an alcoholic, not believing it. Listen to them read the big book. They say, it's a great obsession of every abnormal drinker. I think to myself, I'm an addict. I keep saying those words to myself over the years. I even went to other programs where I could say I was an addict. But I found my solution inside Alcoholics Anonymous. So I stayed inside Alcoholics Anonymous and I was kind of like a leopard that covered my spots. I figured,
you guys have good sobriety, and you're all non-leopards. So I'm going to pretend I'm an alcoholic, because you got great stuff in here. But every single time I heard something like this about alcoholism, I thought to myself, I don't really have alcoholism. What I have is drug addiction with a minor in alcoholism. You know? Kind of like, you know, like a dual major. I was a dual major. Let me tell you, when I picked up that first drink after not having a drink in my system for 7 years, I found out what it was to be a real alcoholic. A big book, textbook alcoholic. A guy that couldn't pass by a Walgreens without wondering what was on special. Those 7 years without having a drink in my system, I saw myself as just an addict that, because I used too much drug, that I lost the privilege of drinking. I saw myself as a drug addict that lost the privilege of drinking. Like when I went to treatment, and I'm going to tell you about that next week. When I went to treatment, I did not go to treatment when I was 21 years old to give up drinking. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know that was a prerequisite. I had a horrible problem with drugs. My parents sent me out to Hazleton in Minnesota. I was 21. I was 22 years old. I'd show up there. I said, listen, I have a terrible problem with drugs. They tell me, and you won't be drinking anymore. And my hand to the truth. When they said to me I wasn't going to be drinking anymore, that I couldn't drink anymore, I thought maybe I was at the wrong treatment center. Because the first time I'd been in a treatment center, they were already misdiagnosing me. I said, I didn't come here for the non-drinking program. I came here because I used to hang out 178th in Amsterdam in New York. I had no problem with drinking. This is what I found out over the years. It doesn't matter what the substance is. I could be addicted to the fans blowing around and around and around. I could you can come back here tomorrow. I'd be like this. Bing, bing. If it makes me feel different than myself, if it makes me feel good even for a second, I'll sell my soul. I used to sell my soul for a second of a different feeling. I wouldn't even say a second of pleasure. There were some good times. We all had good times in here. There's people in here that say that the worst day sober is better than the best day drinking. I don't know where they drank. That's not true for you, Eddie. Is it true? I mean, I would never give away one day sober for a best day drinking. But to make that type of a statement, what kind of, that's nonsense. I drank alcoholically because it worked. The first time I put booze into my system, it worked. I put the booze in my system again because it worked again. I didn't like myself so much before the booze went in that as soon as the booze went in again, I loved it. Somehow, when you do that over and over again, you develop a taste for it. Not everyone develops a taste immediately. I had to work at my taste of alcohol. But once I got there, I definitely developed a taste. So I needed to stop there because I don't want us to get held up on, you know, because I know Jenny's probably not here tonight, but she's one of the few NAs that'll even cross over into the Alcoholics Anonymous because they feel that they're going to lose their card to the Narcotics Anonymous program. In this meeting, we're going to be talking about one thing, the solution. He has the solution. We're going to try to get closer to him during those weeks, okay? So you can leave all that nonsense at the door. We learned that we needed to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. You know what? Today, I can fully admit to my innermost self I'm an alcoholic. Whatever that entails. I can't put anything into my system. No pill, no new thing that they just invented, no special cocktail that has less alcohol, no near beer, no used to be a beer, nothing that even close to a beer. I don't even want to be next to a person that even smells like beer. Because for me, there was a guy that came in my counter yesterday or today, and he had some type of alcohol in his... Oh, because yesterday was New Year's Day. And I work on New Year's Day. And so he had alcohol in an open container. I didn't want to be around it. Because I'm not in danger because of the way I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and the way that I'm in the center of this program. I'm not in danger of jumping over the counter and taking his drink. But I don't even want to... I don't even want to think about it. Now, I'm not saying that we need to run away from it and we can't go into places and pull people out if our motives are right. We've been into places we pulled guys out of crack houses when our motives are right. I'm not saying that that's not possible. We recoil from a hot, like a hot flame. I'm not saying that we need to be afraid of alcohol in any way, but I don't want to be around it. I don't want to be around the smell. Even the word, I like to use the smell, just to keep it away from you. Just so that my face knows that I don't want to be around the smell. I make scowling faces anytime I think of it, because I don't want to start thinking it's okay. Because last time I ran in my 50 year sobriety, I started to look at the billboards. I started to be driving on 95 and I started to see the billboards. They invented new alcohol since I got sober last time. Stuff with different flavors and Pima and Zima and Ema and all these different things. And I started to think, Ernie, really, it must have been you and Eddie. They've invented an entire another profession since you guys got sober. But I started to think to myself, I could drink some of that stuff. You know, it wouldn't be a big deal. I never thought I'd go back to my original substances or my original being powerless. I never thought that that would happen. It says here in the big book that if you don't think you're an alcoholic, go out and try some controlled drinking. But what it doesn't tell you is you might not come back. You know, it says try this experiment. But like try this experiment like, you know, putting yourself with peanut butter all over your body and throwing yourself in a bear cage to see if the bear is hungry. That's the experiment that they're talking about. It's not like, you know, like a little Petri dish. This thing would change your life. I went out and tried some controlled drinking, and 7 months later, I'm in a treatment center with these guys, and I can't get sober. My wife serves me with a restraining order the first day in treatment. What was the director of our treatment center, Richie? What was her name? Eileen calls me in the office. She says, I got good news and bad news. The good news is you don't have to bother your wife that much, because the bad news is you got a restraining order here that she just let go. That's not good news, bad news, Eileen. That's bad news, bad news. It was my birthday. It didn't say that in the big book, go try some controlled drinking and then you're going to have divorce papers and restraining order served to you while you're in transitions. And you just got out of pink slippers the day before. I didn't see that in there. But that's what happened. One thing I learned this time around, that it's so much easier to stay sober than it is to get sober. Am I right, Patrick? Where's Patrick? Am I right? Is that the theory of the century right there? Is that the statement of the century? It is so much easier to stay sober than it is to get sober. They should make you tattoo that. You should have to get a tattoo on your head, right on the front. That way when you go into a bar, they know, don't serve that guy. That is the statement right there. It is so much easier. Now, I'm not saying it's easy to stay sober, because some days it's tough, right? But it's certainly easier than getting sober. Try to remember back in when you were in the slippers, and it's the worst. Now, is it a blessing? It's a blessing, but it's also the worst. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. No real alcoholic. This is the thing that we look at that line and we say, well, maybe I wasn't a real alcoholic. Maybe I'm kind of the hard user. I'm a hard drinker. Maybe I could drink at a bar that's a mahogany bar. Maybe I could wear like a nice suit. I could come in. I could put my leather briefcase at the side of the bar. I could order one of the things from the top shelf and I could sip it. I might be that guy or gal. Maybe I'm a martini. I see they have the martini, entire martini bars. Maybe I could sip a martini. Nick, you and I tried that experiment over in Hollywood. I tried to sip martinis. We went to the martini bar, Nick and I. We started sipping martinis. Next thing you know, we're ordering whatever the cheapest thing is. What do you got by the gallon? Forget about the blue martini. What's by the gallon? That's where I wind up. Every single time I've been sober, I saw myself as the highest end alcoholic. I always saw myself as that guy that was a three-piece suit. First of all, we wear shorts to work, so I don't know where I thought I was going to get a three-piece suit and then go to the bar. Maybe I thought I was going to go home after work, put on a three-piece suit, buy a briefcase, because we don't have papers to carry. And then I would show up at a bar with that suit and that briefcase, and I would order whatever the top shelf liquor was. And I do want to tell you that when I picked up that first drink after that 7 years, and the truth is, I was a top shelf alcohol drinker. Because even though the moment I took that drink, my whole entire life changed, it changed. It changed. Even though all the years I was fantasizing about it, that I wasn't an alcoholic, and then I took a drink, I didn't become an instant lush. But something changes as soon as you put a substance into your body. Let me repeat this for all the people that think that maybe you can take painkillers and still go to meetings, or maybe any of that nonsense. Right now it's a very sore subject for me, because I'm losing a lot of friends to this thinking you can take pills and go to a meeting and pick up medallions. It's kind of breaking my heart. Let me tell you, the way to peace and serenity and happiness is not trying to take a pill and go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's actually working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nothing that you need to add to yourself, that's going to get you closer to Him, that's going to help you on your own program. And we all know someone that's doing it, so don't think you do. You don't. Don't think nobody in your immediate support group is not doing it, because they are. It's a horrible thing, and I think we should institute drug testing at all the meetings from now on. I'm just throwing it up there. That way you just know if the guy's not sober, we don't want to hear from you. Strike that from the record. That was just my personal stuff. The other thing I'd like to say before we get into the weeks is get a 12 and 12. If you're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and you don't own a 12 and 12, then you're really just in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is in these two books. These are our textbooks. And I know a lot of people don't own a 12 and 12. And if you really want to get the full impact of these steps over the weeks, you're going to need to have a 12 and 12. I'm not saying you have to bring it. But we're going to be reading a lot in the 12 and 12. Now, some places in the 12 and 12 is amazing. Because some places in here, they've had the perspective of people that have been sober over 15 years from when they started the program, and the people are more sober. What I mean is, when they wrote the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1935 to 1939, and they said that rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, those were people that were doing this path, and it was an awesome path, and they were sober about 4 years. If the program starts in 1935, and June 10th of 1935, and then they write the Big Book in 1939, that means they have the experience of 4 years. Now, I'm not putting down anybody in here with 4 years or under, but I know you guys got great programs, but I don't want you writing the Big Book that I follow for the next, like, my entire lifetime. But they do. They write the Big Book in the first 4 years of sobriety. And we're still following it, and it works perfectly. But what they found out over the next 15 years is that some of those people that were involved, where they said that we are men and women for 100 that have recovered from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, they found out that some of those people didn't recover. They found out that some of the people that wrote the Big Book were actually drinking by the time the 12 and 12 comes in. A lot of people don't understand that. They think that Bill and Bob, they started the program, they wrote the Big Book, and everyone was a Shangri-La. They just tiptoed across the country and they just go, "You're sober, you're sober, you're sober, you're sober, you're sober." No, it's not how it worked. Some of the founders got drunk. Some of the founders found out that it wasn't just about telling the next alcoholic about the message. That's one part of the program. The 12-step is one part of the program. Another part of the members in Ohio thought that it was all about God, that it is all about God, but you can't just have that. Because there's ministers and clergy and pastors and rabbis that can't stay sober. They deliver an unbelievable message. Everybody comes up, gets communion, they get drunk. So they found that in Ohio it wasn't just about God. In New York, they thought it was just about the integral parts of the steps. What they really found out is that it's all together. That's why there's 12 steps and not just one. So what we have in the 12 and 12 is the benefit of 15 years of experience. From people that actually stayed sober. Like, I know that there's guys in here that have been sober longer than me, that have been down the road longer than me, that have experience with microphones that are working better than this of you, I have to tell you. That have experienced things that I didn't experience. I don't have 24 years of sobriety. I don't have 31 years of sobriety. I have 7 years of sobriety and now another 8, and they're glorious years. But my experience is different than someone that's been around for 31 straight years. So the 12 and 12 is written with the experience of 15 years. Now, let me tell you something else about the 12 and 12.
There's places in the 12 and 12 that I don't like. Now, everything that I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous comes from these two books and the book that I believe that they were reading when they wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that I think that you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams is in these two books. But there's some places in the 12 and 12 where I feel, and I'll share with you over the weeks, where I feel that man got involved. They were looking about, they were all about God in the first 164 pages of the big book. God, spirit of the universe, creator of the universe, big H-I-M, and they were so excited about God, and then somehow they got politically correct in some of the steps in the 12 and 12, and they started making it about a higher power. Or people started relapsing, and they realized they needed to make a more universal net, whatever it is. But when you combine the two of these books, when you combine these two, when you actually own these two, when you actually study these two, you're going to have an amazing experience of being in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want you to take a look at my physique, and don't be jealous. I want to tell you that my wife and I, we belong to two gyms. We have two gym memberships. One my grandfather pays, and it's a family membership, and my wife goes there in the morning. Another one is we belong to a gym over on Sheridan Street, LA Fitness. And I've had a membership there for 8 years. I've never been in there once, not even once. But if you ask me if I'm a member of US, what is it called? If you ask me if I'm a member of LA Fitness, I am a member of LA Fitness. And this is what it does for you. So if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous and you don't own the books and you don't do the work, you are a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but you don't get the results. You understand? That's exactly the same thing. So this is 2010. We're the most blessed crowd in this area. We're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous the day after New Year's. Everyone in here is sober. I don't know if anybody picked up a white chip tonight or if anybody needed to pick up a white chip and they didn't, but it doesn't matter. We are sober tonight. We're going into 2010 as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, but let's be members in good standing. Let's bring our books. Let's get involved in our own recovery. Let's be able to bring... Listen, this is not about one guy that does the steps, and we need to get him in our clubhouse. We need to get this just one guy. We need to get this guy. How about we all go start bringing meetings to different clubhouses? But in order to do that, we need to know the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's not like some secret Mason society or, you know, something where you need a special handshake. This stuff is right here. It's right here. This thing that we have found God and is a new freedom and a new happiness is not some enigma. There's no special handshake. It's in the books. And in the places in the books where it says that it's not enough just to be in these books, and it says we realize only a little and we have to see where religious people are right, I'll help you along that journey to show you where you can maybe find out some more information. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous, the program that I understand, not only transforms our lives, but enhances our lives. It's not a place where we need to just go and sit and park ourselves in and then just hold on to our little sobriety. It's a place where it says we realize we know only a little. And we'll see some of you as you trudge the road of happy destiny. How many people in here, Tommy, are you happy? I see you all over town.
Yes, I am.
How many people in here say, I'm happy, I'm having a great time. I want to see you along the road as we run. Jason, I know why you're happy, okay? Next week, we're going to talk about, you know, the first step, which is the most important step, is the only step that doesn't talk about this power that we're talking about, this God. It's the only step that really focuses on the problem. It's a step that you really need to take fully or you're never going to get this thing. It's the only step that you need to take perfectly. You have to see that in your life. I'm going to stand in front of you for a moment. You have to see in your life, Dice, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
You have to see where in your life. Dice is one of my closest friends. He's a musical genius, so I was going to ask him to play the guitar, but he doesn't have it tonight. So that's why I said Dice. It's a place where was I? A place? A place called home? I was somewhere good.
Happiness.
It's the only step that if you don't believe you're it, if you haven't taken it, if you haven't taken it before you got in the door, if before you got in the door tonight, you're going to fail. If you walk in the door tonight and you say, you know what? I still can go on Friday nights and have a cocktail, and this doesn't really... The only thing I'm doing here is I didn't get paid till Thursday. And I'm here because it's not Thursday, and I've already spent my money, and I'm going to be fine next week. If you cannot admit powerlessness, if you can't see where your life became manageable, then everything that we're going to learn during these weeks is going to be nil. It's going to be void. But even if you come with an ounce of willingness, if you still think that you might have Friday nights in you, like looking at that table, they look like they might have some Friday nights still in them. But if you come with a little ounce of willingness, that you know what, maybe I am powerless. Maybe my life did become unmanageable. Maybe when I was served with a restraining order and then eventually with divorce papers, that you know what, maybe it wasn't about drinking what was on the top shelf. Maybe I really couldn't stop. Maybe I didn't actually, when I thought I was making a choice, maybe I didn't actually have a choice. Maybe alcohol actually made the choice for me. You know what? Not only now I take a look at it over my life, I can see where alcohol did make the choices for me. If any of that starts to seem like you, any of that's going to make sense to you, then you're going to have an amazing ride in here. We're going to go into some things in the book that's not usually talked about in meetings. We're going to go into the thing where they talk about the fourth dimension, where we're at tonight. Because not everybody in AA is in the fourth dimension. Some people are in dimensions, but not the fourth dimension. And I got to tell you, the guys that I hang around with, the people that I love and respect, the wife that I'm married to, none of them are going to stay around if we're not enjoying ourselves. This thing, if we're just hanging on and it's not really about anything greater than ourselves and it's just about ourselves and maybe looking good and sounding good and feeling good, nobody's showing up here on a Saturday night the day after New Year's. It's not convenient for anybody. How many people are there first time here at the fourth dimension? Be honest, first time here at the fourth dimension. We show up here on a Saturday night. If we're not going to enjoy ourselves, we're not coming back, right? So the reason that Happy Bob is happy is because he used to be a degenerate that was locked up a lot. And now he's not. And the reason that this table over here is still smiling and that Eddie picked up his 31 years and he went to two meetings yesterday and a meeting tonight is because he has found a new freedom and a new happiness. And the reason that Eddie and I travel together for the last 8 years and go everywhere and Bodge and we go everywhere together when we're speaking is because we love this way of life. We do this thing 4 or 5 times a week. We have a meeting that we go to together on Wednesdays. We have a home group on Thursdays. We usually have a couples meeting that we go to on Saturdays. We have step meetings during the week, and we're absolutely enjoying ourselves and having a great way of life. So I challenge you to come back. Mario from Philadelphia, good to see you. Come back. Come back to the fourth dimension next week, and let's bring in 2010 with a bang. Amen? Yeah.